This is Talk Star Wars,
the official podcast at talkstarwars.co.uk.
Welcome back to Talk Star Wars, the official podcast of talkstarwars.co.uk. I'm Mark.
I'm Stephen.
And I'm Rob.
And this is episode 14, and we've got quite a lot to talk about. Something very special happened this week. Should we jump straight onto the news, chaps? Or do you want to chit? Well, yeah, let's not pretend that we haven't been chit-chatting for 10 minutes.
Yeah. The chit-chat I want is about the thing that you're talking about. So
yeah.
Yeah. Out in the open.
Okay, so episode 8 is in production, as we know. We discussed last week. We got our first 35 seconds of footage.
Yep.
How do we feel about that?
I'm you know what's really exciting about it is the fact that it picks up exactly where 7 left off. I think that's really, really cool.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure how they were going to do it, because obviously between New Hope and Empire there's a couple of years, you know.
Yeah, 3 I think it is.
Three sounds right, yeah.
Oh no, sorry, 3 is Empire Return.
Oh, Empire Returns about 1, isn't it?
Is it? Oh, I heard, you know what, I was listening about this earlier on today. I probably got it the wrong way around. Yeah, it probably is maybe. 1, 3, the first one, yeah.
Yeah, so like I say, there's a definite quantifiable gap at the very least between New Hope, Empire and Empire Return. So for them to pick up exactly where 7 left off is really interesting.
Yeah, I think the gap between A New Hope and Empire was years, but yeah. I'm pretty sure that the gap between Empire and Jedi is months.
I think it might be 18 months.
Yeah. I'm seeing if I can have a look, but I'm going to fall down a rabbit hole if I do this, so let's not bother with that.
Wikipedia is a dangerous place.
It is. That shot you were saying, it's the Jedi steps scene from the end of Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
And just viewed slightly differently. And the first thing that hit me when I watched that was Harry Potter.
Okay.
And I don't know how many Harry Potter...
I wasn't paying that much attention to it. Was he in the background or something?
Yeah, he just whizzed past on a
Nimbus.
On a Nimbus, that's the one. Yeah, I was just trying to think what that was called. What I mean is the first couple of films being made by Chris Columbus had a very specific look to them, a very specific feel about them. And then the minute it changed, and I'm trying to remember the director, was it Juan Antonio Bona?
It was Alfonso Cuarón Alfonso Prisoner Cuarón. Of Azkaban, yeah.
So the minute it changed directors, the tone shifted.
Yeah.
But everything was, it was kind of the same,
mm-hmm.
but just slightly different.
There's still that magic, as it were.
Yeah, it was like you're looking at the familiar, but it's like, what's that phrase? It through a glass darkly or something. It's
Scanner darkly.
Yeah, it's very, very, to me, it just seemed like, oh, this is the end of The Force Awakens, but this is weird. We're looking at it through a different prism here. There's
so
something.
It's the same scene then.
They just reshot it.
They just reshot it.
Yeah.
So not, that scene probably won't be in the next, or is it? Is it, is it an overlap?
I think it is. I definitely
think
it is. Because they went back to Skellig Michael Island just to shoot that.
Yeah, it seems weird to me that it wouldn't be, they wouldn't spend a little bit of time there. I really kind of hope, a friend of mine said that they'd like to see this, and I kind of agree with them. I'd like to see them sort of looking at each other awkwardly for a couple of minutes like they were at the end of the film. And then Luke just goes, so do you talk first or do I talk first?
Nah. Yeah, that would be brilliant, wouldn't it? Or just have him pull the lightsaber out of a hand with a force and then just strike her down with it.
I think that it kind of lends credence to what we were talking about them changing a lot of the film, because in an ideal world, they would have filmed that alternate angle scene while they were there the first time to save money, if nothing else, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Well, it depends on Rian Johnson, though, doesn't it? Because he's not just the director of this. He's written this film as well. So it depends on him whether or not he was ready at that point. Because I know a lot of his decisions were made after he'd seen The Force Awakens and he'd spoken to JJ about putting things in, taking things out to set up 8 and 9. So I suspect probably what this is he's seen an assembly of The Force Awakens and thought, yeah, I'm going to go from there. I'm not going to wait and, you know, pick it up a year down the line.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. We're going to go straight away. And it might be, for the purposes of continuity, it might be so that you can see a later version of Daisy Ridley, because she's 2 years older now. And at her age, 2 years makes a big difference. You can see it in her as well. She's changed.
She's been
but she's playing a scene where she's months old, like weeks old,
yeah,
isn't she?
Yeah.
So how are they going to play that? They're going to CGI her a bit?
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? I mean, we'll see this scene, and it's a reminder of what we saw at the end of Force Awakens, and then our new film will take straight off there. So that her look there will be what we're used to, perhaps. You know, I'm sure that's a small element of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but I also think that he'll want to spend some time. I've heard that they're creating some of those. They're shooting in another location. For the life of me, I can't remember what it was, and I wasn't expecting to talk about it. Otherwise, I would have made some notes. But they're recreating those little sort of beehive huts somewhere else, in another area that isn't, because that's a preservation site, isn't it? It's a
National
Trust.
Yeah,
so
the proper word for it.
They're not going to be shooting there for the most part.
No.
Skellig Michael Island is part of, I think, the National Trust, or it's a heritage site. So
yeah, they won't be about outstanding natural beauty or something like that.
They're not going to be allowed to film there for as long as I think they're going to need to. So what they're doing is they're creating some of those little beehive dwellings somewhere else on a location that you can get to by land. You can drive to it, because on Skellig Michael Island it's not that accessible.
Okay.
And they have to go over on local fishing boats and things like that, and it's a nightmare. It was a nightmare for them before.
Yeah.
So they're setting up to shoot somewhere else, so they're clearly going to spend some time on that planet. I think it's called Uk-2, that planet.
Okay.
So they're going to spend a lot of time there, so clearly her training is going to be like this Dagobah-like training sequence on that planet.
With a 80s power montage.
I hope so.
But
really
not necessarily on that island, because there's not a lot of dwellings on that island other than those little huts then.
No,
there's nothing, I don't think. There's puffins. No.
Puffins?
Maybe there's some sort of underwater element to it.
Maybe. Could be.
Maybe they go down, maybe a cave network.
Yeah, could be.
There's no reason why they can't experiment with, like you said, an underwater section or a cave section filmed somewhere else that's just, oh, it's part of the same planet, and we're not going to quibble because we're all excited by the Star Wars.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you think that that scene, Mark, it isn't colour graded yet? It looks really weird. Obviously, it's just chucked straight onto that footage, isn't it, and given to us?
Yeah, I don't know, to be honest. I mean,
it looks very bright and TV-like.
Yeah, and it's out of... it's not in the right aspect ratio.
No.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's probably... raw footage, I would think.
So it could be that... And also, her face is unedited, and they might actually touch it up a bit.
Yeah, could be. I think we can definitely be sure... I think we can be pretty sure that it's the first scene of Episode 8, rather than a kind of, you know... Because it's just the... You don't bring the camera crew there, and, you know, the whole works of the kind of... the clackerboards and all that stuff, if you're going to just... It's just going to be another shot from 7 that they didn't use. It strikes me that there's a definite conscious choice to make that the first part of Episode 8. And it might just be that that's the bit that they've rewritten for Rey. You know, a bit of extra exposition at the beginning about it all.
Because they've all had their parts increase, or we assume.
Exactly.
Well, that was the talk, wasn't it, a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, that's what we're led to believe, certainly.
But the
can I go off on a quick tangent?
Go on, mate. It wouldn't be the same without your tangents.
No, tangent. they're not going to end this on 9, are they?
No.
They can't.
No.
Because, hey, they want it. It's a cash cow, for a start.
Sure.
But officially, is there only going to be 7, 8, 9?
No.
So they've not set a limit on the number of films?
No. I actually meant to bring this up first before I got overexcited and jumped into this footage chat, but that Bob Iger, who's the CEO of Disney, had a quarterly earnings conference call last week, I think it was, and that's where he made the announcement that both 8 and 9 are now in production.
Right.
Which is a little bit of a surprise.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't expected 9 to be doing anything.
Not
right
filming,
now.
Though, are they?
He said... It's in production.
Wow. Wow. So we could get some teaser footage from 9.
You could see something from 9.
That's impressive.
That would be very hard to do without giving anything away.
Yeah.
You say that, but we managed to go into episode 7 knowing next to nothing. So it's not, you know, they can do it if they put their minds to it.
And he doesn't, I don't think the CEO of the most one of the most profitable entities on the planet would make a mistake like using the term production when he actually meant pre-production. So I'm pretty sure that he's told us there that they are shooting for episode 9.
So they could bring forward 9 to a year later than 8, which what's 8, 17?
I don't think they're going to do that because, 8 is 17. So you got Rogue One this year.
Yep.
You've got 8 next year.
Mm-hmm.
And then they've just announced that Han Solo will be out in 2018 in May.
Okay.
But expect that date to move. I would expect that to move once Rogue One has done business.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it does, doesn't it? Yeah. I mean, if they're going to...
Episode 7's lightning in a bottle as far as success goes at December. But if Rogue One, if it's as you fear, and you guys have talked about this before in the days before me, you guys have talked about before how Rogue One might get lost in the mix because it's not, there's not really, people aren't really sure what it is. So it's possible that it might not have the same, you know, pull that the December release does for episode 7, and it just tanks in comparison.
Right now, I think a Star Wars film in December this year will garner a lot of attention, but right now as it stands it's the wrong kind of attention, because I honestly think that most of the audience that are going to want to see this film are going to think Star Wars means sequel to Force
Next
Awakens
one. That's all we've ever known as well. You know, it's only really the Clone Wars animated movie that's ever deviated from that formula.
Yes.
And that wasn't really treated in the same way.
No one saw that.
No, I went to the cinema to see it, but then it had Star Wars on it, so I thought I should.
Yeah, I saw it as well, but...
We're special cases.
Yeah, I'm a special case. But I don't think I'd have made a dedicated trip to see it like we've been to see Force Awakens, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't think... You know, I know people that have been to see The Force Awakens that I would never imagine would go and see a Star Wars film.
Oh, likewise, yeah. I mean, the same with Deadpool, obviously, talking about Disney and profitability. There's all sorts of people on my social media that are raving about it, and I would have never thought it would be up their street at all.
No. But you guys seen Deadpool?
I haven't seen it yet, no.
Yeah, I've heard it's brilliant.
I saw it on Monday.
Good?
Is it good?
Yeah, it's very good. Yeah, it wouldn't normally be my cup of tea. I have to say, there's a lot of fourth wall going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very much a character thing.
Yeah, and it's straight out of the comic, which kind of made, you know, I thought, oh, okay, they're just playing it. But actually, it's quite funny, and he does a fourth wall within a fourth wall.
Oh, brilliant.
Which is quite genius.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, likewise. It's very good. It's definitely one of those films you want to watch again, because you know that you'll enjoy it more the second time.
Cool.
Not that I didn't enjoy it the first time.
Yeah, you enjoy it. Just that little bit more. Yeah.
Sometimes they sneak things past you, don't they, in your first viewing?
Yeah, I've been reading a lot of the Easter eggs in it, and there's even because obviously that you're not allowed to mention Marvel characters in mutant related films.
Yeah.
And vice versa, but they do. Yes. They mention this Ben guy. But they don't give any more information other than that, so they get away with it. But people who know the series for Deadpool,
it's like The Thing or Wolverine or somebody like that, if they're talking about a particular character. Yeah.
It's very good though. Oh, sorry, second tangent, Mark.
Yeah.
Tangent within a tangent.
Tangent within. You're like Deadpool. I think people are going to be, you know, general audiences are going to think Star Wars means sequel to Force Awakens. Mm-hmm. And no one's going to be prepared for Rogue One. Obviously, we are, because we're steeped in this stuff, you know, podcasting about it, writing about it, consuming every little thing we can.
I've got coasters.
I just think they're wasting their opportunities right now when they could be getting trailers out there now and introducing people to the concept that they're going to see a Star Wars film that isn't... going to feature the Skywalkers. Yeah, it's not going to be a sequel.
I wonder if they're saving it for Celebration, but I don't know if that's right to do so.
Too late.
Yeah, this is it. I think it's. I wonder if that's what they're doing, but I don't think that if it is what they're doing, it's the right move.
That's far too late.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I mean, well, it depends, doesn't it? Because we're only assuming that it's the same universe but completely separate. But what if they're going to integrate it some way and a lot more? Because they're going to realise these things, that people want Star Wars and they want the thread that we're on. And maybe they're planning to integrate it. I mean, you know, who knows?
What do you mean integrate it, mate?
As in a lot more crossover. A lot of references to the original trilogy and what have you, between prequels and the original trilogy, right?
Yeah.
Well, you've just said the P word, and that's why I think that Lucasfilm and Disney are holding back at the moment, because I don't think they really want to come out now and say Rogue One's a prequel, which it is technically.
Yeah.
I think they're very much afraid of that.
And that is a toxic word. It's a very divisive word in the Star Wars community.
It certainly is. And I think people might think, oh God, not this again.
Yeah.
So they're clearly trying to work out a marketing strategy.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what that should...
millions on it, and we could do it in 5 minutes for nothing.
Well, you know, this 35 seconds of episode 8 footage they put out this week, that's hit with such an enormous appeal. Everybody's in love with that little clip. And they're calling it an episode 8 teaser, you know. That's the wrong... Right now, everyone knows there's a Star Wars film at Christmas. That's the wrong thing to hit the ground right now.
Yeah.
The episode 8 footage, because people are going to think, oh, yeah, there is going to be a film at Christmas.
Yeah, see, that's it. Could we be looking at a young Leia and Luke in this Rogue One?
I doubt it. We might
Leia,
see
maybe.
Leia.
Yeah,
but
Leia, I could see.
I don't think...
How old would she need to be?
No, it's minutes before
episode four, it comes in at the very beginning of New Hope, so I mean she'd have to be kind of in her late teens, I guess.
Yeah.
So perhaps CGI'd, or even played a mo-captain CGI'd, or played by her daughter.
I think played by a daughter. That to me seems to be the best move, is to put Billy Lord in the buns.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And cast Jimmy Smits to play Bail Organa again.
Oh, that guy doesn't age, so definitely.
He doesn't, and it's only 10 years. You know, he'll look just about right, I think.
Yeah, probably.
But they're missing a trick, because even now they've got that celebration footage from last year that they called it a motion poster, didn't they?
Yeah.
That little clip. They've got that in the can. Why not just float that out there?
Yeah, just keep people reminded that this is happening.
Yeah, and you know you can have a disparity then between everything that's being spoken about episode 8,
yep,
and the fact that Rogue One is a different entity.
Yep.
You can...
I mean, they have revealed Felicity Jones, didn't they?
Yeah.
They're her character, which is kind of a little bit of a reveal.
What?
I mean,
the character... What do you mean, the character name?
Yeah.
That's not official yet, though, is it?
Oh, okay.
It's still a rumour, I believe. I'm just going to check StarWars.com.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing with that is that they've done more in terms of announcing the cast of Episode 8 than they have with Rogue One, and Rogue One's coming out this year, and it's weird that they're so...
And we haven't even had a teaser trailer yet.
It's bizarre. It's very bizarre.
I think this is a bit of a mistake, really.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. The more we talk about it, the more I'm a little bit uneasy about the whole thing. Yeah.
Do you think there's... So it's in, what, post-production now?
Yeah, it's virtually wrapped on photography.
You think they've got some problems, some editing problems or woes or some concerns?
No, I don't think so. From what I'm hearing, everything's gone well.
Wouldn't it be weird if we ended up liking it more than episode 7?
Wow, that'd be something.
I think that would be great. I think that would be a great thing.
Wouldn't that be amazing if it was like, oh my God, I did not see that coming?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, stranger things have happened.
And look at the cast. Felicity Jones is amazing. Riz Ahmed is amazing. Diego Luna is a fantastic actor. Forrest Whitaker, Mads Mikkelsen, Ben Mendelsohn. Oh, yeah. It is a tour de force of character actors, proper actors. And then you've got the Darth Vader of it all.
Yep.
Which is something that I think I dropped off the show notes because it's getting a little bit old now, but there was a Darth Vader supergroup put together for Rogue One.
Yeah.
Which I kind of picked up on back in November that Brian Muir, the sculptor for the Vader helmet,
yes,
had moved from The Force Awakens over to... did you chuckle then, Steve?
Sorry, you said helmet.
Excellent. yeah, he'd moved across from The Force Awakens to Rogue One very quietly. Now, the only reason you bring Brian Muir anywhere is to get him to make the Vader headgear. so that I don't say the word helmet and make Steve chuckle.
Tip turn around.
So James Earl Jones is on board now as well.
That's awesome.
To do the voice. And this is going to be an aggressive Vader that's getting action.
Yeah, I'm all for this. He's doing the voice in Rebels, right?
Yeah, he is.
So I'm not surprised that they brought him on, because if you can get him, you should, because he is just that voice is iconic.
There's your threat, your tie-in, and your common denominator through the films, right there, isn't it?
That's it.
Absolutely.
And do you know the other problem that solves as well, Steve? Is it places that film in a timeline.
Yeah.
If you've got that angry Darth Vader, that rage-filled Darth Vader that we saw board the Tantive IV or whatever it is at the start of A New Hope,
yep,
that places him in time. He's not preoccupied with Luke. He's not running around trying to undercut the Emperor by getting himself an apprentice.
So
this is purely one badass.
At the end of that film, we could end where Episode 4 starts.
Yeah, I think that's
the impression I get.
I mean, that would be great to watch. Well, no, I nearly said I'd watch Episode 3 then. But to watch that before 4, wouldn't it? It would be nice.
I'll watch it for you if you want.
you can do that, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know one thing that I do find quite exciting, and maybe I should put this in the Star Wars Insights, but Alan Tudyk from... did you laugh again, Steve?
No.
Oh. I'm preempting your...
I think I got where it's supposed to happen. I got the cue.
Should we try it again? I'll set you up again, Steve. Alan Tudyk.
Yeah.
there it is. He's playing a motion-captured character.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. And I suspect he might be some sort of elaborate droid.
Okay.
Which I think would be really interesting if you had a droid that you couldn't put someone inside a suit to make something a little bit more like an exoskeleton.
A droid with four balls.
Yes. like BB-8. But it'd be more like BB-32.
He must have four.
Yeah.
I suspect he might be the only one that comes out of this movie alive. And it would be a nice little nod to the sort of themes of Star Wars, if you have a droid passing the plans over to Leia, and then she puts the plans in the droid and sets the saga in motion.
Could be.
And then the rest of these rebels are all killed.
Yeah.
Because that might be an interesting thing. You know, there's no sequel to this one. There's a lot of hats left on the ground, and only a robot makes it out alive.
Interesting. Yeah, that could work. I mean, you know, to kind of end on a, especially as we've had Episode 7 end on a kind of upbeat note, and historically the next film in the series has been a darker one.
Yeah.
And obviously it's not a part of that trilogy, but there's no reason why it couldn't be a darker tone.
Yeah. It'd be nice.
Kind of, you know, a Blaze of Glory style ending where they all kind of go out fighting and stuff.
Yeah. Because it's going to be, they've said it's like Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
So it's going to be bloody, it's going to be violent, and it's going to be loud, and I think it would be awesome if no one made it out but the droid. And if he gets onto the blockade runner and gives Bail Organa and Princess Leia the plans, you got a droid passing the plans to Leia, and she passes it to a droid, and then you could have Jimmy Smith say, wipe his memory, and it's a nice little nod back to the end of Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah. I mean, Jimmy Smith would have to make himself scarce, wouldn't he, at that point? Because he's got to go back. He's got to be on Alderaan when it blows.
Yeah, well.
So I suppose he could sort of be the one to kind of, I'm going to go and tell them the good news, and let me know how that goes.
Yeah. See, I'm assuming that he'll be part of the Imperial Senate, which is still active at that point.
Yeah, that's true. It gets dissolved in Episode 4, doesn't it?
Yeah. So
it's referenced.
He might not go back to Alderaan. Maybe he's on Coruscant when that gets dissolved, and who knows what dissolved means. It might literally.
Yeah. Could be where Boba Fett and Darth Vader had that set to.
Boba Fett.
Here he goes. These little pseudo quotes. Anyway, right, we got derailed again. Okay, let's get back onto these show notes and cover a few other bits. John Boyega, one of our favourites from The Force Awakens, got the Rising Star Award at the BAFTAs this week.
Awesome.
I think that's pretty damn cool, don't you?
I think there's. I don't think there's anybody more deserving.
No,
really.
I think
he's awesome.
He was amazing in that movie.
Oh, he's fantastic. Yeah. Just a quick, while we're on the subject of John Boyega, do we think he had anything to do with the Force? Because I had a conversation with Paul on, we were Facebook messaging each other, and he asked me, friend of the show, Paul, from Movie Geeks Film News, asked if there was any significance to Finn, the Force waking up within Finn. Do we think that was even a thing?
No.
We've spoke about this at length. Doesn't everyone have the Force to a degree? If you were to mention the M word.
Yes. Yeah, so, but there's only a certain amount of people that can really do much
with it.
I think that was designed to be part of the fake out.
Yeah, I agree.
I think he's
He's not Force sensitive, is he?
No, I don't think so. I think he's, you know, got the base level of M words.
Yeah. And we said M for mother, M words.
Yes, we did.
We're not Tarantino.
Not the other one.
It,
you know? No.
Yeah, I don't think he had anything to do with the Force there at all.
That was all part of the whole fake out, which I fell for, you know.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be Finn. I thought the whole point of it was, you know, and I even had people telling me, it's a fake out, it's going to be Rey. And I just went, well, you know, I don't mind being wrong. And I didn't. I was right.
Yeah.
But I think the whole thing is very much designed to be leading us in one direction while kind of just delivering us the fake out at the end of towards the end of episode 7. I don't think there's going to be anything. Yeah, absolutely. Like I say, it took me in, and I was taking in a lot of different speculative theories, and you know, that was one that I thought was going to be hold water, and it didn't. And you know, I'm big enough to admit when that happens.
That's kind of where we are. I don't mind being scuppered, because it means I've been surprised, and I'm on board for that.
Yeah, as long as something cool happens in its place, then that's fine.
Did you see John Boyega's tweets this week?
I didn't, no.
From the shooting.
Were they good?
No, they were great. One of them was, hang on, I'm going to call it up so that I can get this right, because
you have
intriguing.
To do stuff like this justice, yeah, and you know.
Right. His tweet the other day when they completed shooting was, first day on Star Wars 8 complete, we must face them, fight them.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah. That's a bit of a... Now you mentioned, I do recall seeing this one, and I remember thinking it was a big turnaround for him to be saying that on, you know, as Finn, on Finn's behalf, as it were.
Yeah.
Because of what his attitude was throughout most of episode 7.
Is that what you take that to mean then? He's talking about the First Order.
I think so, yeah. I think that's the impression I get.
Do you think episode 8 will be the First Order hunting him down?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's going to be, like, Empire Strikes Back is going to have probably some nods, some kind of similar themes. I think it's going to be probably less of a retread than episode 7 was of episode 4. I would hope so, anyway.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it's going to be less of a retread, but I think there are definitely going to be some common themes, because, again, it's a hero's journey storyline, and there are certain things that are inevitably gonna follow. So I think that I don't see any reason why they couldn't have the First Order kind of pursuing the Resistance around the galaxy, and that can still make for some entertaining moments if it's done right.
Steve, what's your take on
bounty hunters?
You think bounty hunters?
Yeah, because they need to do it. It's Empire, isn't it? It's Empire time.
Could
that
be
the coolest bit, that lineup of bounty hunters with all the you know, that IG-88 and all that lot.
Well, here's a question then. Do we need bounty hunters, bearing in mind that we've got the Knights of Ren?
That's where I was going.
Yeah, because I can't help but notice there's a lot of kind of chatter about it. Around the time the second teaser came out, and you got that shot of the Knights of Ren in the rain, which turned out to be from the Force Vision, the movie. And you can't help but notice that one of them, even if it's... There was a Photoshop of them, I think it was, I'm fairly sure it's photoshopped of them saying it was Boba Fett on the far left, and I didn't believe that, because
it does look like Mandalorian armor.
I think it's Mandalorian armor, or it's a homage to them, in the same way that Kylo Ren is kind of aping Darth Vader and trying to be Darth Vader. I think there might be somebody who might have a bit of a fetish for Mandalorian kit and gear, and they're obviously still about, because they're flags in Maz Kanata's was in Mazgan Arthur's castle.
And we haven't seen them go, so that unless you see somebody buy it, even when you do see them buy it in Star Wars, it doesn't necessarily mean game over, does it?
Like Darth Maul's proved that.
Yeah, but I suspect that there might be more to it, and I'll tell you why. If you look at Darth Vader's position in the hierarchy in the first film, he's pretty much playing second fiddle to Tarkin, right? It was like his lapdog, really. Even Leia said, "I expected to see Tarkin holding your leash or something like that."
Yeah, something like that.
And then in Empire... Sorry, Steve.
Can you make a time machine out of Mandalorian?
Oh, goodness me.
If you man the DeLorean, yes, I think you can.
88 parsecs a second.
Wow. That's a hell of a distance to cover.
By the time we get to Empire, Vader's much more of a sort of military leader, isn't he? He's on that big Star Destroyer and he's barking orders at people and following them down into the ground battle when they're going to Echo Base and things.
Yeah.
I think we might see Kylo go for a similar evolution. So he's very much... He's certainly got more of a status in The Force Awakens than Vader had in New Hope, because he stood up to Hux...
He's very much
dealt directly with Snoke, didn't he?
Yeah.
I could definitely see him being at Snoke's side in Episode 8 and dispatching the Knights of Ren.
Yeah, could be. You might not see much of Kylo Ren in Episode 8. This is the thing we forget. You know, there's no reason why he has to be in the film throughout. He can be, like you said, pulling the strings from the sides and sending out the Knights of Ren. Hux is going to be there as well, and actually I liked the kind of power play that was going on between them in Force Awakens, and I really hope we get more of that, because I thought Hux was fantastic in that film.
Also, from a character perspective, people probably enjoyed Kylo Ren's character a lot less than Finn and Rey, and if it's been rewritten, they might have chopped a few of his bits out.
I hope he gets more
because he wasn't as well received, was he, generally?
No, this is true.
Well, because he killed Han Solo.
That's never going to go down well.
They didn't like it when he took his helmet off.
No.
Yeah, to me that came a scene too early. That was, you know, that should have come when him taking his helmet off with Han Solo on the bridge should have been the first time we saw that happen.
Yeah, exactly.
To me that seems...
all the cynicism out of it. Is that a word?
Yeah. No, that works. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Did you say cynicism?
Yeah.
I think you've invented a word.
I like that.
That's the episode title this week.
Let's try and make that a thing.
Episode 14, cynicism.
Cinnamon cynicism.
But I think that would be good. They need to fill his character out a bit more, because it was a little bit thin for me, just a little bit. Well, you know that.
Yeah. I know what you mean. I'm hoping he gets more presence. I don't necessarily think he has to get screen time to get presence, though.
No, well, Vader didn't have a lot of screen time in Empire.
This is it, you know, and you think of something like Moby Dick, right, to use a literary example. It's not in the book for a lot of it, but it's talked about the whole way through.
Yeah.
And in Jaws, the shark is not seen until the very end, and actually when you see it, it kind of loses a bit of its luster.
Yeah.
You know, because it's been sort of referenced the whole way through and you've seen little glances of it and stuff. And there's no reason why they can't do the same kind of effect with Kylo Ren. Obviously, I'm not suggesting he's sort of... they're out in space on their ship and they suddenly just see him brush past in space. But, you know, not to the same degree. But I think they can do... you know, less can be more if they do it right.
Yeah, I agree.
We'll finally see some Force ghosts.
That'd be cool.
I was really surprised that we haven't spoken about this, but we didn't see any.
Not in episode 7. No, this is true.
Let's jump over a couple of bits in the show notes. We've already discussed the Han Solo. We might, if we get time, we'll circle back to the Lego stuff. But on the subject of Force Ghosts, Steve, Ewan McGregor looks like he'll be in episode 8.
So he can only be a Force Ghost, then?
Absolutely, he can only be a Force Ghost.
And he was the one that they directly told that there are ways to manifest yourself after
you die.
Yes.
So it kind of makes sense.
And obviously, Obi-Wan as the character is the only one the first one we saw do that.
Yeah.
In the original trilogy, he was the first one to ever do it. And obviously, Yoda's a quick learner, because he showed him in a couple of, you know, 20 minutes. And then Anakin's even more, you know, they kind of pop along and go, oh, what are we doing? Oh, we're just going to appear to him at the end of the end of the celebration, if you don't
surely
mind.
Surely yeah. Force ghosts, though, they look like they do at the point they die.
No, I don't know.
Not necessarily.
Obi-Wan, why is he going to look like, what's his name? I was going to say George Peppard then, off the 18, but I don't know where that came from. It's like completely the other end of the spectrum.
It's a guy with grey hair.
I'm all for that recast, though. That sounds interesting.
Yeah.
No, I think the precedent has already been set.
Yes.
In Return of the Jedi, the special edition, where we saw young Anakin as the Force ghost, which I know left a bad taste in everyone's mouth, but it kind of makes sense narratively because that was when Anakin died, and Darth Vader was born.
Yeah.
And that's what we saw.
But then you can't do it with Obi-Wan then. You can't make him young because he was fine when he was old and died.
Well, I wonder really, because we saw Luke saw Obi-Wan the way he knew Obi-Wan. And then when he saw Yoda, he saw Yoda the way he knew him. He never saw Anakin.
Mm.
So Anakin manifested as the version of Anakin when he died. Now it doesn't mean I think there's a subjective thing here, that perhaps and I really like this idea as well, in episode 8, if we're going to see Obi-Wan, we might see two versions of him.
Okay,
so when Luke sees Obi-Wan, we'll get a version of Alec Guinness.
Oh.
And when Rey starts to see Obi-Wan, bearing in mind she's already heard him.
Yeah.
When she starts to see him, she might see Ewan.
Interesting.
Because she's never seen Obi-Wan. She's got no visual frame of reference.
Well, now, we're speculating that they're going to be Force ghosts, but there are ways in which characters can appear without being Force ghosts, because obviously holocrons are canon.
Yes.
So there's no reason why it couldn't be a Jedi holocron of Obi-Wan Kenobi's that Luke's found.
That was the speech at the start of Rebels, wasn't it?
Hmm.
Okay, that would be interesting. I like that idea more, because you don't have to sit there and think, they fudged that in.
Yeah, in the same way that you watch Return of the Jedi and you don't see Luke go, who the hell is that guy?
Yeah. I think I would much rather see... I can see your point, Steve, that see him in a hologram makes more sense. But I think that having Ewan McGregor's Obi-Wan Kenobi as a Force ghost gives him more to do.
Yeah,
there's more for him to explore as an actor than rehashing something that he's already done.
Yeah, he's an A-list actor.
And then it's just a cameo, isn't it? I mean, he's done his cameo now in The Force Awakens with the voice.
Yeah.
And they very deliberately used both Alec Guinness and Ewan McGregor there. And I don't think that was an accident.
That's interesting. Yeah, I never really thought about that, but that makes sense. Here's what I'd love to see them do, right? And I know this is never going to happen, but let's say for speculation, wild sake, that the budget ran out right in post-production, right when they get to that scene, and you end up with just a translucent blue still image of Alec Guinness with Ewan McGregor's voice.
Just like the mouth cut out with the the only thing moving is his lips.
And maybe the eyes follow around the room.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant. Well, they nearly had the guy who does the voice. The actor's name is James Arnold Taylor. He does the voice in Rebels.
Yes.
And in fact, I think Clone Wars, right?
It was originally, and he went on Twitter and said that he was in there until Ewan McGregor picked up the phone. Until that point, he was going to be the voice.
Yeah, I think he'd already recorded it, actually.
He had, yeah. He said as much. And he said, they got this Scottish guy to replace me. I don't know. Oh, I see. Okay. I mean, I'm sure he got paid either way, so I'm sure he's happy enough.
He did other voices as well.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he's in I don't think he's credited in the movie, so I don't know if he's done some little bit parts that weren't, you know.
Well, there was a lot of voice actors. Let's just have a look. Voice. Voice actors. Episode 8 voice actors. Yeah, there's a lot of people like Kevin Smith that did a voice.
Yeah, Daniel Craig and
David W. Collins, who does the Star Wars Oxygen. Matt Lanter, who was Anakin Skywalker in The Clone Wars. Ashley Eckstein, who's Ahsoka Tano. Kat Tabor, who plays Padme in The Clone Wars. Dee Bradley Baker is just about all the Stormtroopers, all the Clone Troopers.
Some voice actors are in cartoons and animated series especially are prolific.
Yeah.
And I mean, even Mark Hamill himself has done all sorts of stuff in the animated series. It's huge. He's done video games, he's done cartoons, he's obviously the most famous one, obviously, apart from Luke Skywalker, is the Joker in the Batman animated series and the video games, but he's done a ton of stuff.
I was reading an interesting article about Luke Hamill after his car accident, and how they one version is that they wrote the medical room scene in because of the accident. One, it was a happy coincidence, and
I think I've heard the latter said that it's just.
Well, Carrie Fisher swears it was written in deliberately for that. Even the scars are in the same place.
I'd heard that for years. Yeah,
interesting. Yeah. I've heard the latter for sure. I mean, the former also makes sense. So I mean, either one could be true, but they definitely made the most of it for sure.
Yeah, definitely. When you're young, I never knew that. I never knew he had a car accident. He wasn't even a real massive star then, was he? You know?
No, true.
I mean, wasn't even on the news.
And also nowadays, with the social media age, we'd know all about it because we'd see photos just after the accident on Twitter and things like that. And back in those days, you didn't have that stuff.
Which is interesting about talking about accidents. Harrison Ford, and isn't there something to do with being sued?
Yeah, well, that's on our show notes, so we'll jump onto that, shall we? The Force Awakens.
That was my intention, to make it look seamless, but you just ruined it. Nice one, Mark.
You're not seamless because you jumped over a whole story.
You got to strike while the iron's hot.
All right, I'll cut this bit out then. That's a good point, Steve. Actually, see what I did there? I could be an actor. I could totally be in episode 8.
Acting. You probably thought I was asleep there.
And I... Acting. Sirian, you shall not pass.
I love that scene so much.
It was brilliant.
And the outtake of it as well is just... Have you seen that one?
No, I haven't seen the outtake.
So for those not familiar, we're talking about the scene from Extras where Ian McKellen's talking about acting. And how it just pretend to be somebody else, and there's an outtake where he starts doing the wizard, and he just breaks apart, and Ricky Gervais goes, and obviously Ricky Gervais has got a really distinctive laugh, which is one of the things I like the best about him, is his laugh, and he just falls apart laughing, and it's just brilliant. It's just really one of those really nice, warm, funny scenes. Yeah, it's interesting. Just circling back quickly to before we move on. It's interesting this idea of two Force ghosts, because there's a concept shot of episode 7 where Kylo Ren was going to have a vision of Darth Vader.
Yes.
And it was going to be a composite of Anakin and Darth Vader's face, and it would change as his mood changed.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that you kind of latched onto the idea of there being two ghosts depending on the viewpoint, because that would make for a very interesting kind of callback to that concept. Yeah, maybe. Maybe there's something to it. Harrison Ford's legs being sued or something. What was it?
Oh, that's a good point, actually, Rob. Yeah, the Force Awakens production company. See what I did there, Steve? Segway.
It's seamless.
Thank you. The Force Awakens production company called Foodles is being sued by the HSE over the accident of Harrison Ford being mashed up. The Health and Safety Executive.
Oh my God.
So that's a governing body that says they found something like 4 breaches in the health and safety procedure that led to the accident. So it's probably, this is what I do for a living, so there's probably no risk assessment, no method statement, no fail-safe on the door.
Yep.
Insufficient training.
Didn't it break J.J. Abrams' back as well?
Yeah, really? He actually popped a...
vertebrae or something, didn't he? Trying to lift it. Because instinctively, that's what you do, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know? And he's probably... Yeah, and he's probably read all those stories about how people gain superhuman strength when they're in danger. And he goes, it's my time. It's my time to shine. No!
Well, maybe he thought they'd just sort it out in post.
Maybe.
If I try and lift it, someone will see Jamie lifting it later and it'll be fine. A bit of lens flare in there.
Realise that them filming Star Wars here is a massive boost for our economy. Let's not sue them over silly things.
Yeah, but you're forgetting, Steve, people need the opportunity to be really officious about things.
Yes, absolutely. There's a lot of admin needs doing,
Steve. See you next Tuesdays.
Yeah, but this is why they create these little production companies like this company Foodles, they're created as a shield between any trouble like this and the parent company.
Because then the money's not there.
No, they've got finite amount of resources then, and they can get sued into the ground and disappear, and you'll never see them again.
It's a bit like the it didn't work for BP, but that's why they it wasn't officially BP that did the massive oil spill, was it?
No.
It was they were the parent company.
And it was a shell company. See what I did there?
Oh, no, that's,
hey! Everybody drink.
That was dreadful. Yeah, it's a drinking game whenever we make terrible jokes. Yep. Yeah, so there you go. So that's
warm that bottle up, boys and girls.
Foodles are going to be sued into Oblivion and Step In Space Bear, which is the production company for episode 8.
Okay, so here's a question, Mark. So you say you're a bit more knowledgeable on this than the average man on the street. Would they be able to sue for negligence on this, or would they have to have the leg pick a door out of a line-out?
I think it's going to be the leg picking a door out of a line-up, but then...
Oh, good luck with that. I mean,
they have to get the right
leg.
It's going
to be hard to make that stick.
They'll have to get the right leg because the other leg got smashed up in a plane crash, so it's
just
going to be
are they going to have distorted versions of the same story? And you know, I remember there's being something about golf. No, that we must have the wrong leg. You know?
And then that leg might already have a beef with Chewbacca, and he might point the finger at Chewie.
Exactly.
And says, you know,
yeah. We've seen them bicker on. Was it Jimmy Kimmel?
Yeah, that's genius.
They had a little bit where he was sort of, "You slept with my wife."
That was absolutely genius.
That's brilliant.
Talking of sleeping with people's wives, Benicio del Toro, who's probably married and sleeps with his own wife. I'm just Steve wants silky segues.
Good lord, that was interesting.
Benicio del Toro has finally been officially revealed as being a part of episode 8,
even though
he mentioned it some months ago.
Yes, I'm so happy about this. I love Benicio del Toro. He's one of the finest actors of his generation.
Mm. Any idea what role he's going to have then? What do we think?
An FBI agent.
Could be a load of things. I mean, he could be a kind of smuggler. He could be
Jabba the Hutt.
He could be a character along those lines, like a crime lord or something. I mean, he played, what was it, the Collector in Guardians of the Galaxy and a couple of other Marvel movies.
Yeah.
So he's got that kind of weird sort of off the beaten track character down, you know. But then, having said that, my real gut feeling and my real strong desire is I want him to have some kind of connection to the dark side of the Force.
Right.
When I first heard it, not realizing the sort of the story behind the character, I wanted him to be Ren. I wanted him to be the guy that Kylo Ren kind of is, you know, all his knights are sort of set up in homage to.
Yeah.
I wanted that to be Benicio's character. And I mean, it could well be, but that's my sort of feeling on it, is I want it to be him to be this kind of ultimate
bad guy.
Yeah, I was going to use a word that was going to have to get the bleeper out, but I managed to refrain.
Don't do that. I can't be bothered to bleep.
I've got a record going, so I want to keep that going.
I reckon they'll play him off as a bad guy and then make him good like they did with Finn and Rey having the Force.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think there might be something similar going on in Rogue One, actually, with Mad Mikkelsen's character.
Yeah, it could be, because he's historically played a bad
villain.
Chap. Yeah, and he's very good at it.
From what I'm hearing, a few spoilers, potential spoilers for Rogue One, because obviously we don't know anything at the moment. But it looks like Mads Mikkelsen plays a guy who may be responsible for the overall design of the Death Star.
Ooh, okay.
And Felicity Jones plays his daughter.
Interesting.
And then he has an Oppenheimer-like fit of a crisis of guilt. Conscience.
I have become Death, the destroyer of worlds.
Exactly.
Yeah. Is he
literally?
Is Felicity Jones's character name decided yet?
It was rumored this week that her name is Jin, but nothing official.
No surname.
No surname yet.
Okay, because there are obviously in the, you know, it's not proper canon anymore, but there are characters who have been associated with the Death Star's creation.
Mm.
And I was just wondering if there's a possibility he might be brought back as one of those kind of a Bevel Emelisk or somebody like that, who's, you know, from the Legends canon, something along those lines, where he's sort of an engineer who kind of has a crisis of conscience. Although I don't think, I mean, Maydeen is an Imperial defector in Jedi,
right?
Somebody like that, maybe.
Yeah, that's the impression I'm getting, that he's an Imperial. Was probably you probably saw it you know, we're at a time where the Senate is still in place, so obviously, the politics are very much muddied, where people might think that they're working for the establishment, as in they're good guys, and then a little bit, you know, like some of the Nazis when they realised, oh,
yeah,
this isn't as kosher as we thought.
I think he's a wrong'un. You know what?
But he's his character, he's signing the autographs at the moment, Mads Mikkelsen, as Galen.
Okay.
Which is a name that's
interesting.
Already in play in the Star Wars universe.
Refresh my memory?
Starkiller.
Oh, of course,
In the Force Unleashed.
Yeah, Starkiller, yes.
What, Luke's original name?
Or no, there's a character called Starkiller. It's not canon, but in video game. Yeah. He was an apprentice of Vader's.
Yeah, he was a secret Vader's secret apprentice. It was quite a good character until the sequel, where they just made him massively overpowered. I mean, granted, in the game, he brought spoilers. Although it's been years, he brought a Star Destroyer down out of orbit.
Yeah, Steve, you're familiar with that.
Admittedly, low orbit, but
what's that?
Him bringing the Star Destroyer down using the Force to
crash. Oh yes, because that was the cover art for the game.
That's it. Yeah.
Yes, right. Yeah.
So that was him, played by Sam Witwer.
That's right.
Mind you, size matters not, Mark, and you should remember that next time you're trying to woo bitches.
So, moving swiftly on, I suspect Benicio del Toro did, like, you know what we were talking about earlier on with how Kylo might take a slightly different position and be more of a commander. It wouldn't surprise me if Benicio del Toro turns out to be a Knight of Ren.
Could be.
And maybe we see him out there doing the Boba Fett thing, working for Kylo Ren.
He could be the one with the Mandalorian look. Could well be. We don't know at this point. This is one of the wonderful things about it. We've got no knowledge of any of that stuff beyond the fact there are about, was it 7 of them?
Yeah.
I think in the shot.
Yeah.
6 or 7.
And we were saying,
memory serves,
I've been assuming that the guy that was killed in Rey's vision with the red lightsaber.
Yeah.
I just drew a conclusion that he was a Knight of Ren.
Oh, okay.
Kylo cut down to save Rey because he wanted Rey to himself.
Yeah, we talked about this theory.
That was last week.
To a degree last week, didn't we? I was actually originally of the opinion that it could have been a sort of flash forward to her meeting, to her first encounter with the Knights of Ren after things. But then the more I think about it, I don't know really. I mean, I suppose it makes a bit less sense every time I think about it. So maybe I'm coming around to the idea that it was a flashback.
I've heard people say flash forward with regard to that scene previously.
Yeah.
But it was revealed this week that he was a hero.
Okay. Who was a hero, sorry?
The guy that Kylo killed with the red lightsaber.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Yeah. Was a hero. It's that in a Rey's story, a new book that's come out. I think it's a kid's book.
In which
book.
Case, it's a flashback then, isn't it, for sure?
Yeah, and she mentioned that he was a hero that was cut down, so...
It's a shame. I was kind of hoping for it to be a flash forward, and that would be kind of the first time she encountered the Knights of Ren in full. And maybe she'd be sort of super powerful and have a proper big fight with a lot of them and stuff.
Yeah, that would be very cool.
I was also hoping they'd be the guys from the raid, but that obviously didn't pan out.
No, Tessu Leech and the Kanji Club.
Yeah, exactly. I was sort of hoping that would be they'd be the ones in those suits, but it's not the case.
Yeah, that was a good movie, that, the raid.
Oh, it's brilliant. Yeah, they don't like cartilage much, but it's a great.
Yeah. Because the guy on the Harrison Han Solo ship was from the raid, wasn't he?
It was.
All the Kanji Club were.
The front two guys were some of the more prominent characters in the raid, I think. Especially the guy on the left was definitely the lead cop in the raid one. I haven't seen the raid.
The other guy was just a guy that would not stay down.
Yeah, exactly.
Talking about staying down, Laura Dern. Laura Dern was also announced as being a part.
See, there you go. That's a segue and a half right there. That's
She's been announced for episode 8. So obviously, people are leaping to the "she must be Rey's mum" conclusion.
Right.
But I'm not sure about that. What do we make of Laura Dern? I'm not a huge fan.
She's all right. Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously, my most kind of notable experience of her was Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably, for a fair few people listening, it's probably the case.
Yeah, she was terrible in that.
Eh. you know, it's not the reason I watch.
She wasn't terrible.
She was playing to the back row.
Well, possibly. But yeah. I can't think of, she was worse in Jurassic Park. Was it, she didn't she appear
she was in
second?
Three, I think.
Yeah, Jurassic Park 2 was Julianne Moore.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah.
I have seen her in some fantastic stuff. I saw her in The Fault in Our Stars was probably the most recent thing, and there was she had a TV show as well not so long ago, which I can't remember what it was called.
Oh, another one you mean? Yeah, I can't think either.
She was good in that, but she was fantastic in Fault in Our Stars. I mean, if she delivers that level performance, I just don't know if she's got a place in this sort of cinema.
It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah.
Pete, how many times have we been shocked by people's abilities in these films?
No, you're right. Yeah, I should give her a chance, really.
Yeah. Could be the next Lando.
And there is a nice connection there in lineage, because her dad, Bruce Dern, was in a film called Silent Running.
And The Burbs.
Which, yeah, he was in The Burbs, yeah. But Silent Running is kind of... there's some connective tissue between that film and Star Wars.
Yeah.
Because of the little droids, Huey, Dewey, and everything. You must love that film, Steve.
I love it, but it makes me cry every time.
It is really good. And Bruce Dern is... if Bruce Dern has been cast in this movie, I'd be doing cartwheels tonight, but...
I mean, really, that's where... I mean, what year was it, Silent Running? Was it after
Was it what? Sorry, Steve.
Was it after R2-D2 or before?
No, before, because those robots were kind of...
precursors.
Yeah, they were part of Lucas's inspiration. Let's have a look. Silent Running was 72. Same age as me.
Yeah, if you haven't seen Silent Running, go and watch it, because it is a fantastic movie.
I'll have to do that. I haven't seen it.
Oh, it's Rob, you'd love it. Spectacular.
Yeah, okay. I'll give it a go.
You have to be a bit forgiving, obviously, with the tech and the effects, but it is a fantastic movie.
Well, yeah. I mean, I one of my favourites is Blade Runner, so I have to be very forgiving of the fact that it's, you know, it's past the time of Blade Runner and we're not driving around in hover cars and able to go to the off-world colonies and stuff.
Silent Running is actually more relevant today than ever before. Because the environmental stuff that's going on.
Okay.
The premise of the whole film.
Yeah. And it was directed by Douglas Trumbull, who did all the special effects on 2001.
Oh, okay.
So without his work to develop that, the motion, the multiple pass of the optic composition of film special effects, we wouldn't have Star Wars.
Oh, wow. Okay, well then definitely I should watch this film if for no other reason than as a salute.
Yes, indeed. It is... a spectacular movie. It's something I really do love, that film.
Okay, I have to make a note of that.
And it will make you cry.
Really? Okay. I don't cry a lot of films, you know. It's a weird one. I think I burned myself out when I was a kid crying at stupid stuff.
Yeah, like me, nearly crying at a 35-second clip from episode 8.
I thought you meant I've cried about you. I've never done that.
Well, not yet.
What's that film with Matthew Broderick with the monkeys? He can't watch it.
Project X.
Oh my God, he can't watch that.
No.
He literally will be in, like, he's a 40-year-old man, and he will be in just on the floor like a wuss.
Good save.
Right, I think we've only got a couple more bits of news, and we are looking at the hour mark, so we might need to sort of wrap stuff up soon.
All right, I can go for as long as you guys want. You know, I have no life.
I've got a second coat to put on, but that's about it.
Are you cold?
Yeah. There you go.
Drink.
No, that was a good joke. You don't drink for the good jokes.
Drink double.
The Force Awakens trivia. Something I heard today that I thought was really interesting. The Cloud City duel from The Empire Strikes Back between Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker was reshot for The Force Awakens.
What?
Yeah, what's that about?
It was supposed to be part of Rey's vision.
Oh.
She was supposed to be watching the duel. And we would have seen it from a different point of view.
Right.
So what, this is going to be an extra?
I'm hoping that...
that'd be amazing.
It was brought up today.
Amazing if it's part of the film. If these scenes are so good, make a special edition. Why are we so averse to getting a special edition of The Force Awakens if there's so much extra footage that people want to see?
Star Wars does have previous when it comes to special editions.
Yeah, but yes, we do. twit face.
And extra rocks.
Yeah, but this is, if this is something people want to see and they're that good, like your that little eyed thing that passes the saber and
Maskanata.
Maskanata.
Wonderful phrase.
Like those bits. I've heard of so many extra scenes now that sound awesome. Put them in.
Yeah, well, I mean, the one with Maz Kanata, my understanding of that one was that she was shot handing the saber to Leia, because that's why it's in the teaser. But they realised that once they'd put her on the Resistance base, they didn't really have anything to do for her.
Exactly.
So they thought it would be better to kind of have her vanish quietly and then turn up again maybe later.
Isn't she dead now, though? Didn't the building fall on her head?
No.
What? No.
I don't know what you were watching.
No, she gave Finn the saber, and then you don't see her again after that.
Yeah, but she was in there when it all collapsed.
No, she came out with Han, Chewie, and Finn.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, I remember. Sorry.
Yeah, she hands the saber to Finn outside, because it's just before he goes up against Nines, or whatever his name is.
Yes, sorry. Yeah, I realise now. I must have dozed off.
Blasphemer.
Yes. Yeah, so I'm quite keen to see that. I'm really looking forward to seeing that.
This is the thing. I mean,
play out again.
Steve's right in that if these scenes are awesome, there must be good reasons why they'd have to be kept out. But at the same time, they might not be awesome. You might just watch it. I mean, I watched loads of scenes in episode 3 on the deleted scenes and went, that was cool. And that was it. I could tell where they were supposed to go. I didn't really feel the I didn't really feel the difference for not having them.
No.
I suppose a lot of it comes down to the fact that, to me, it snaps that they were trying to make the perfect length of film for people in audiences, because it's going to be huge at the cinema, and not that they'd run out of bits to put in the film.
Yeah, agreed.
I think if they could have their time again and they had a vote and people said, I would sit in there for 3 hours quite happily, they would probably... Don't forget, they want to fit as many as these shows in a day.
That's exactly it, Steve.
Absolutely.
That's exactly it.
You know, they were doing midnight showings for more reasons than just, you know...
Yeah, exactly. And I necessarily won't buy this straight away. God, that is really blasphemous. But if it had a special edition and it was 15 minutes long with loads of bits, I probably would.
Mm. Yeah, so, maybe. There is something to be said for that hook that brings you in on day one, isn't there? You know, kind of the element of, oh, well, now with even more Wookiees or whatever. I mean, obviously, episode three proved that doesn't necessarily make a better film. But.
No.
Well, also, there might be emotional scenes in there that make a lot of the scenes where Han dies a bit more bearable and a bit more, actually, you know, now it made sense.
Yeah.
There was actually, I've read somewhere that there is a scene with Leia, because a lot of Leia's stuff got cut out.
Yes, it did.
And I would really like that filled out, her remorse at losing her love.
There's a whole theme in the book of loads of extra dialogue that's not in the film.
Yes.
When it comes to Han and Leia.
Opportunity to make, I know he doesn't want to set that precedent of making special films, but you know what? When it comes out on Blu-ray, it is a different film, because you can sit in your house all day and watch it. So
multiple times if you want.
I don't want to have to go into a little section on the Blu-ray that says bits that aren't in the film. I want them to be sandwiched between scenes that make them.
Yeah, and with branching technology, you can have that seamlessly now. You could jump in and out of those extra scenes and play it without if you want to, or play it with. But I think there's like JJ had an idea for the pacing of this film, and that's got to be the bottom line, is that he had a pace in mind, and that little snippet of Rey's vision, probably to his mind, is perfect, and to mine it's perfect. It's like this, it's this exhale that goes really, really quickly, and then you're out, and she's
it's designed to make her look thrown, you know, at the end of the thing, she's supposed to be disoriented. Yeah, exactly. She's supposed to be more so, because she's had to experience it with a much more physical element to it than we have.
Every time she's gotten to grips with where she is in that vision, she's suddenly snapped out, you know, she's lost, she's in the Cloud City corridor.
Yeah.
Then she's thrown, that spins on its side, she's thrown to the ground, and she sees Luke with R2. And then she's in the rain, and she sees the Knights of Ren.
Yep.
Then she sees Kylo Ren in the forest, and she's... Yep. Never getting a chance to catch up with what's going on.
No.
And I imagine if we're going to see this cut scene, hopefully on the Blu-ray, of Luke and Vader dueling, she might have spent more time in Bespin and really gotten to orientate herself to her surroundings.
Yeah.
And the effect of her being snapped from one place to the next and being rushed off her feet through this vision.
So there are extra scenes of that then, Mark.
There's this scene. With the duel that they've recreated. So.
Specific to the vision.
I think they should not call it a director's cut. I think they should make a longer version and call it the fan cut.
Maybe. Yeah.
There will be a fan one.
Yeah.
We know that's going to happen.
Yep.
Yeah. You're going to make it.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I was sort of half expecting you to say, that's because I'm doing it.
Yes, I'm doing it right now.
Well, I mean, I would definitely love to watch that. For me, pacing is not an issue if you're at home on your sofa.
That makes sense.
If you're drawn into the universe and you're emotional about Star Wars, period, then you won't care about pacing. You like the story, the background, the people, the characters, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Because if you've sat through episode 2, pacing's clearly not a problem for you.
Yeah. I mean, that was... That thing was all over the bleeding place.
Absolutely. I was saying about it last week. If you take the Obi-Wan scenes and cut them into a separate film with the Geonosis battle at the end and the kind of the bounty hunter chase at the beginning, that's a much faster paced film and a much better paced film than what it ends up being.
Well, do you know, I mean, I don't want to be too self-indulgent here, but I mentioned last week that I'd recut the films.
Yes.
The next project I was going to try and tackle after I'd finished with that was cutting the prequel trilogy down into 20-minute TV episodes.
Okay.
And I've gotten as far as doing a sort of rough cut of some opening credits.
Yeah.
Which actually made me chuckle when I got to look at them, because I'd cut all these... It was a bit like Dallas, you know, of all the opening as they turn their head to camera. I found all these little shots of those.
Like that sort of fan video somebody did of the Game of Thrones intro sequence cut as an 80s TV movie.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It's
brilliant, yeah.
So maybe one day I'll get around to that.
I have a request for you for a project.
Yeah, go on.
On a similar note. This one's a relatively easy one, I think, in comparison. When The Force Awakens comes out on Blu-ray, I would like to see my cut realised. So my one would be the Rey and Chewie and the Falcon. They've got the coordinates to go and find Luke, because if you've made your peace with that whole R2 wakes up and goes, sorry, what have I missed?
Yeah.
Out of it. They go to hyperspace credits.
Oh.
That's my ending. That's how I would do it.
Yeah.
You make the Jedi steps the first part of episode 8 instead. And actually, I mean, I know why they didn't do it. It's because obviously we'd been sold the marketing of where's Luke, and if we didn't find out by the end of the film, we'd have all felt a bit cheated.
There would be riots.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, as much as Star Wars fans do.
No, I preferred not to see. No, I think just to splice him in at the very end for 5 seconds was a real cheap way out, personally. I would rather have not seen him at all.
That's the thing, is I would have liked them to sort of, you know where they're going, you know that the intro to the next film is probably going to be the first time you see Luke in 32 years by that point. You know, it's to me that would have been a better cut. But at the same time, I can see why they did it the way they did. Because, like I say, there would have been some backlash if they hadn't put Luke in even for a cursory shot.
Well, this kind of brings us full circle with what you just said there, Rob, about
circle is now complete.
The ending of episode 7 and the beginning of episode 8. And something I skipped over at the start that I wanted to ask you guys was, how do we think the opening of episode 8 will play out? Because traditionally we've always started a Star Wars film with the opening crawl and then a starfield and then a ship.
Yes.
So that's interesting. I don't think it's going to be back on the planet immediately then.
No?
No. I think, well, where are the nasties now? I mean, where are they left? They've all fled.
Good question.
You know, is it them that's on the run now? Are they now regrouping on a planet?
I don't know. I think if we're going to be treading similar ground to Empire, obviously they'd lost the Death Star in A New Hope, and in Empire, you know, we all thought, oh, well, they're done for. You know, they're like Vader was spinning off into nowhere. Where's he going to go? And then we realise we get the reveal in Empire Strikes Back that they're actually a huge organisation, and there's this massive fleet, and suddenly you've gone from a space station to a fleet of massive starships with these giant walkers that they drop on planets and stuff.
Yep.
So what we saw with Starkiller Base dying might not really be that much of a blow to an organisation like the First Order, who may well have a gigantic fleet somewhere.
Potentially. I mean, it could be the opposite. They could really be scuppered because, you know, you do get the impression that they've grouped together a lot of their stuff on Starkiller Base because they're sort of... It's the first time they've really struck out at the galaxy from from what we understand. I mean,
and they're doing the career thing, aren't they?
Yeah, going back into the conversation we had last week about the novelization and how much that extra exposition there is, you learn a lot about the politics from the period.
Yeah.
And one of the things you learn is that the First Order and the Republic, the New Republic, have a treaty, like a peace treaty.
Yeah.
But its condition is that they're not bankrolling the resistance, and the Republic won't admit to bankrolling the resistance. Whether or not they actually are, I don't think it's ever covered, but the First Order is convinced that the resistance is being helped by the New Republic,
and they do,
and they lash out because of that, and they touch on it in a couple of lines of dialogue, you know, they're sort of, you know, they're lying to the galaxy. That really awesome, I think it's awesome. A lot of people say it's really hammy, but I think it's a really amazing delivery when he's screaming with this venomous disgust about the Republic and the Resistance.
Donald Gleason.
Yeah, and you can just see how much he's, you know, how much that character is invested in the First Order and how, you know, how much he really believes what he's saying.
Mm. Really delivers it.
Yeah, he's really delivering it with just such force and such passion that you know he believes every word.
Indoctrinated, isn't he?
Exactly, you know. And but it makes the book is interesting because it makes you, it doesn't make you sympathetic to the First Order, but it makes you understand their reasoning a bit more, which you don't really get in the film. They just sort of go, oh, that's a bit of a, you know, bit of an a nasty move, isn't it? But then you go, oh, well, actually, this is what they thought was happening, and whether it's true or not, you can sort of understand it a bit more.
Yeah. And there's a whole thing with Leia being sort of disenfranchised because she's lost a lot of her political weight.
Yeah.
And she's got an emissary called Corsella, isn't she? Who we see briefly in the film.
Oh, she dies when
they blow the planet up. She's the
Hosnian system up. That's quite pivotal as well. Are we talking about another deleted scene here, aren't we?
I think possibly an extended scene. But she was definitely Leia's supporter in the Senate or in the Republic.
Yeah,
the character got completely wrote out, but it was in there, wasn't it?
She was in there. And she was one of these casting coups years ago. The actor's name is Maisie Richardson Sellers.
Yes.
And she was a big deal. Everyone was sort of talking about, oh, this girl's come out of nowhere and she's in the new Star Wars. And then she's in there for a heartbeat. And I think that's such a shame.
Go on, Steve.
I think we're going to see another version. We've seen a version of Star Destroyer. I think we're going to see, opening shot, a Super Star Destroyer equivalent, and Snoke.
Okay, interesting.
I think that Super Star Destroyer is going to be passing over a pertinent planet of some sort, not where Luke is, obviously.
Okay.
They don't know that, but perhaps where the rebels have fleed from.
Maybe.
That's a fantastic call.
I like that. Yeah,
I do. So a Super Star Destroyer, something that we've not seen before.
Yeah.
Snoke on it, Kylo Ren.
Yeah.
And nice. I like that a lot.
Perhaps they dispatch the Knights of Ren, and that's Benicio del Toro.
So maybe they're going around the galaxy searching down these resistance fighters.
Or I would imagine Snoke's consumed. I think Hux and Phasma will be charged with hunt down the resistance, get that traitor, bring them before me, that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
And then to the Knights of Ren, it's do whatever you have to do to find Skywalker and bring me the girl. And then they go off in that direction. So then we'll have three stories, really. We'll have the First Order chasing the resistance. We'll have Kylo being trained, and we'll have the Knights of Ren hunting Skywalker as he's training Rey.
Yeah, in fact, Empire.
Very similar thematically.
You've got Dagobah and you've got a Chew, whatever you said it was called.
Yeah, that's it.
Sneezy Planet. I think we are looking like another
but
Empire-esque.
I don't know because we didn't really. It's like Empire, but Luke is going to be present in this film, whereas Obi-Wan pretty much wasn't. So that he's going to be much more active. Remember our theory, or Rob and I discussed in part two of the show last week, was how we think Rey's going to go to the dark side. So Luke might find he's got his hands full. And then we can follow the Knights of Ren if we're right, and it's like following the bounty hunters as they're trying to find Luke and Rey. Whereas over there, you've got the army chasing down the Resistance. Probably be some new kind of planet side battle.
I'm not sure about Rey becoming the dark side anymore, because when you think of it, they already covered that now with Kylo Ren's character. She might well be forced to entertain the idea like Luke was.
Yeah.
But I don't honestly think I can't see that happening now. And also, people feel cheated if they invest in a character very heavily and then they trick them in, and they change the character's persona that much. I don't think I would be too keen on that idea.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It depends on how they handle it for me. If they handle it well, you know, if they kind of, for a start, if they make it look like it's possible that she can be redeemed rather than just a full-on, you know, fall to the Force and she's worse than Hitler suddenly. If it's all ham-fisted, it's going to fall
flat. Also, I think they would have given us a little tiny taster of it in The Force Awakens, and I didn't see any bad in her.
Mm.
I mean, did you guys know, she refrained. I know the crack opened and she couldn't, but I don't think she would have killed Ren.
I don't know.
I think she might have.
She went for the face.
Yeah.
She could have thrown the sabre at him. I've done that loads of times in Battlefront, and it's easy.
It's just a tap of B, come on, really.
It's a tap of circle, and off you go.
Circle, sorry, yeah.
I don't know which
button.
Left shoulder, I think. Actually.
I've never played as a hero, so I've never thrown it.
We've got a dark side amongst us.
Disappointing. No, I just mean I've never played as a big character. I've always been the soldiers because I can never find the hero tokens.
No, I know. It is really annoying in that game.
Yeah, it is. I never played as the big ships either, like the Falcon or Slave.
You'll have to join us on Friday. We play it on Fridays. You can welcome to join us.
What format are you on?
PS4.
I have to get. I've got a copy on. I've got this kind of extended trial thing on Xbox One, but a couple of my friends are on PS4, so I might have to just bite the bullet and get a copy on each.
Yeah, you can play with Xander and I.
There you go.
Andy,
yeah, me. I'm rubbish, by the way. So that,
oh, if you honestly, you haven't seen rubbish until you've watched me. The trouble is, we're all arthritic. We're in our 40s.
Oh, brilliant. Okay.
It takes me 3 hours to warm my hands up.
Careful where you go with that one.
Yeah.
We've got no reaction skill. Well, I haven't. No reaction skills and arthritic hands. So how good do you think we are?
Well, I've got completely gimpy hands, so I mean, and I'm in my sort of early 30s and I'm still kind of, I've got the hands of a 80-year-old. I don't know where to go from there without
Yoda.
I like a crusty hand.
Right, that's us done. Okay. Let's get the Force out of here before we get into too much trouble.
That's probably a good idea.
Alright guys, where can people find you on the internet before the next show?
Well, I'm not really doing a lot until the spring, but please look on YouTube. Calistine is my YouTube channel, and I do a lot of insect stuff. It's very boring, but if you like entomology, you like insects, you like saving the world, saving the planet, then that's where you want to be looking.
But it is not boring. It's like watching Geonosis on a YouTube channel. There's a link in the show notes. Rob, where are you this week?
I'm emotionally14.com, that's digits rather than letters, and Twitter at emotionally14. I'm on Twitter myself at RobWadeVision, and then everything else I do is through emotionally14.
Excellent. You can find everything we do by searching at Talk Star Wars on Twitter. You'll find us all there, including Jeremy. You can find everything I do at talkstarwars.co.uk. There's a Facebook page. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. There's some interesting stuff going on there at the moment, like Rob and I discussing everything to do with Snoke. Hopefully we'll record next week. I've got a bit of a weird week next week because I'm disappearing for a little while in the middle of the week. Perhaps we can schedule a recording session for Tuesday, guys, if you're free.
Yes. Tuesday might work.
See if we can do that. If not, we'll be back in a couple of weeks, or I'll try and get something up on the site in the meantime.
Shout out.
Cobra TV. For anyone who's interested in sci-fi, you have to know about a game called No Man's Sky coming out in June.
Oh, yes.
Amazing game.
It sounds... Here's the thing, though, Steve, right? Every time I hear something about No Man's Sky, it makes me a little bit worried. Because every time they hype it up, I think this is too much game suddenly. They're talking about, you know, billions of star systems, all of which you can fly around. And I think, well, I'm not going to, am I? Because I have other games to play as well. It's just, I'm going to find myself just getting Cobra a bit frustrated.
TV, Rob, watch Cobra TV.
Cobra TV,
on YouTube. He's really, really a fantastic presenter. And he covers a lot of things, including managing the hype. Which Sean Murray, the creator of the game, has already raised concerned about. But, Mark, you need to get this game.
Really?
Oh, my God, you need to get this game.
It does look really cool.
There's 18 quintillion planets, and they're fully explorable.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this past week I've spent a little bit of time playing games, and this might give you an insight into how much of a gamer I am. I've been playing Little Big Planet on the PS3.
It's fun. It's a perfectly fun game.
But all I do is
Mark, you want to get thread?
I give the guy a little moustache and a little soul patch and make him dance.
Steve, you're talking about Unravel?
Unravel, thank you.
Yeah, I watched my girlfriend play that game at the weekend. It is stunning. Yeah. Absolutely stunning.
Is it a PS4 game? I can't remember now.
Yeah, it's on both Xbox and PS4, yeah.
Yeah, because I think its code name, it's called Thread when it was in production.
That sounds... Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah, I think you're right there.
Yeah, Mark would like that. I think it's a similar vein.
It's got... have you played Limbo, Mark?
No.
Oh, Limbo was awesome.
It's basically... It's like a sort of... tonally, completely opposite, but it's a very, very fun, similar kind of, you know, puzzle platformer type thing. The colour scheme's bright and colourful. The character's adorable. It's quite... You know, it's cleverly done. The story makes you a little bit sad at times, and then it's kind of... You know, it plays with your emotions very heavily during throughout the game, and you're a bit worried about what's going to happen at the end and stuff. But well worth checking out.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah, I think you'd be up your street. Speaking of games, I might write. I've got a piece coming for Talk Star Wars and Emotionally 14 soon about an old classic Star Wars game from the late 90s PC era.
Oh yeah.
When everything they touched turned to gold until a particular game came out, and it's called. Came out in the States as Rebellion, and it came out in the UK as Supremacy.
Oh, right.
And I was able to pick it up on Good Old Games, like it's a sort of distribution platform with old classic stuff. And they go in and they charge a small fee for it, but what they do is they make it compatible with modern versions of Windows and Mac OS and Linux and things like that.
Okay.
And Supremacy is very dated, but there's a piece coming about. It's basically revisiting it with my kind of early 30s cynical mind and going, did I really enjoy this game, or was I just so desperate for something to play that I just convinced myself? Did I convince myself this was good, or is this actually quite enjoyable? And I've found some, you know, I've already been playing it a bit in anticipation of this, and I'm finding some interesting things along the way.
Oh, that sounds fascinating. I'm looking forward to that.
The PlayStation game, Star Wars game, and it had all the original music, and it had... You know that guy that's like Han Solo, begins with D, and I never can remember his name.
Dash Rendar.
Oh, Shadows of the Empire.
That's the game. Amazing game. But when you look at it,
Nintendo 64,
the graphics were terrible, but in my mind, it was like real.
Yeah, or like, do you ever play Jedi Knight?
Yes.
It was on the PC, and that at the time that was absolutely groundbreaking, because it never had a game with a melee combat system quite like it, and that was playable in first person and third person, and it was doing a load of stuff new for the first time. And you go back and look at it now, and it looks just awful, and it plays it still plays well. It's still a really fun game, but you just forget how far technology has come graphically in the last sort of 25 years. It's nothing short of incredible.
But yeah, Mark, take a look at No Man's Sky on YouTube. There's a brilliant trailer which has Rutger Hauer doing a very similar speech in the end of Blade Runner.
Right, okay.
I've seen things. It's called I've Seen Things, the trailer.
Yeah.
And that will set you off.
Do you want to hear a fun fact about Blade Runner before we go?
Yeah, sure. Go on then.
That scene, the immortal speech that Rutger Hauer delivers, is completely and totally improvised.
Really?
Yep, the entire monologue, they just said, say something kind of prophetic, as you're dying, and he comes up with that off the top of his head.
Wow.
And people judge him for Blind Fury.
Well,
that is a throwback. I saw that in cinemas. Nice. Right, I've got that trailer.
Blind Fury or Blade Runner?
I saw both.
Oh, okay.
But I didn't see Blade Runner until its re-release, I think. But no, Blind Fury, I went to cinema to see.
Yeah.
That's like £3.50. I will never see again.
Yeah. Thanks to all our listeners.
Yeah. Thanks guys. We'll catch you next week, and then there'll probably be a week off while I'm doing silly things.
Yeah, I'm moving house in that week, I think, as well. So that's probably going to be a busy one for me.
Nice.
Yeah. No worries.
Okay. All right. We'll see you all later. Thanks, then.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, guys. Nee, 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 nee